champagnecenter.com, or you can call them at 217-352-2400.
And to check out more information about WEFT, go to weft.org. Look for the About tab, and you can find a whole bunch of information about WEFT. You can find our mission statement. You can find our history, including a video from the 90s. You can find out about our governance. You can find how to propose a show. You can see pictures from our archives. And you can even check out recent episodes of WEF Sessions. And there's a whole lot more. And that's just under the About tab on weft.org. So I encourage you to go to weft.org and find out about community radio, what's going on, what's happened, and how you can support community radio. That's weft.org.
Let us bring the world to you. We may be quite restricted in where we can go and what is safe to do right now, but we promise to bring you a world of music every Monday through Friday from 2 until 4. We have lots of other great international music on our weekly broadcast schedule. To see all of our programs and everything WEFT has to offer, conveniently head over to our website. The website is www.weft.org. There you can get a look at all of our amazing programming, news, music, community affairs. You can also see how you can support WEFT with a donation of whatever size is right for you. We operate based on listener donations, so please don't forget about us, even in these tough times. We want to be here going strong for you at 90.1 FM and broadcasting live on the web at www.weft.org. The WEFT Music Archives are back. You can listen on demand thanks to our partners at Spinatron. Many of our music shows are once again available archived on our website. Go to our Spinatron calendar page at weft.org and click on any of the green colored shows. You'll be able to start an in-browser player and listen to that show whenever you want. Look for the in-browser player. Click on the little triangle to start playback. Now, because of copyright restrictions, the music shows can only remain online for 2 weeks. So if you caught part of a show and you want to hear it all, get back to WEFT within 2 weeks after the show first aired, and you can check out our amazing, locally produced, homegrown grassroots music on your schedule, conveniently, whenever you need to. WEFT.org, just click on the Spinatron calendar page. I think that is labeled recent spins on the WEFT home page.
And welcome to this week's edition of The Prairie Monk. We are lucky enough to have The Prairie Monk, Dave Monk, in studio today. And we appreciate him getting in to share his words of wisdom with us. So, Dave?
Over the last 6 months or for much, much longer than that, we've been trying to use our Heartland Pathways as an example of not-for-profit activities. The state and federal people are want to encourage people to bring forth ideas. So they're not, the rules are not that stringent, but they're there and they're helpful. Mostly these efforts are instituted by one or two or three people. This is not a crowd. And these are often people who are learning. So we've been taking you through that learning process. The product that they're talking about, the idea, is often very diffuse. We don't know quite what we're doing. And that's okay. You're learning as you go. we have, in this region, very good glaciated soils. They have been taken over six generations ago in bulk with huge tractors. One of these tractors that was creating rivers to drain was sold this week at multi-billion dollars. It went to the Case factory. There's only five of these huge tractors in the universe. But they tried. They tried with oxen. Horses weren't too good because they didn't have cloven feet. But this swampy area had moraines dropped by glaciation. It was rich. And I want to today take you through some of this place because we have a trail between White Heath and Clinton, which is a multi-million dollar trail that belongs. Let me remind you, you're in a wealthy region, which is all corn and soybeans. And there's very little recreational space or other alternative space where you can go and talk to people about how they invented themselves and what they do, and you have people exchanging. The internet has helped, and people have extra time to do that. We have a retreat in Monticello area, which has been around for eons. It has attractions. It was where waterborne people came up, especially in flood time, and settled on the river. It wasn't exactly at where Monticello is now. It was Musgrave, about a mile or two north, and it was situated there because they put in a dam, and they put in a race so that the water gradually got higher than the water wheel, and it ran a mill. And that mill could grist grain and saw timber, lumber. Gradually that moved to a moraine area, a Cerro Gordo moraine, and became Monticello. It's an antique town. It has a central square. Most towns have removed the central square and have a courthouse that is flat and one story and not three or four. And it has surrounding buildings that have been kept reasonably intact. Just a few 100 yards away was a Piatt County house, and Dr. Caldwell invented a syrup of pepsin, and that factory eventually became a 250-person factory with camaraderie. And Dr. Caldwell didn't want to be an entrepreneur, but his entrepreneurial people raised millions because this was a very popular elixir and it went around the world. So, first of all, I'm going to take you from Champaign south to Monticello Road. Monticello Road goes west, straight as a die. And then you all of a sudden come to a rise. That I want to show you because that is a moraine. And if you want to buy apples or fruit, you have fruit trees on that moraine because there's glacial till there and it's warmer and a different cat from the flatland drummer and flanagan soils in the vicinity. You come over the range. It's also a place where people want to build because it's 6 inches higher than anywhere else. So you come down into Monticello, and you are in a railroad center. There's a north-south railroad called the Norfolk Southern, and it goes south to the Wabash Line, and it services an elevator complex called Top Flight. That requires you to some extent, get out of your car or drop your drone for a while and walk around Monticello. There is an east-west line. It comes from Champaign through Staley, through Bonneville, to Seymour, to White Heath. And it wisely. This complex, which has been there forever, has constantly upgraded. The Pixman factory is an upgrade. The Railroad Museum is an upgrade. The library has been recently reconstituted. They're putting in a regional port sporting complex. And all this brings in tourist money, not crass tourist money. It's money where people come out of interest. They'd like to go to the brown bag and enjoy themselves and talk. And talking back and forth in a sensible manner is very helpful. Sometimes you'll talk to someone and you will want to finish the sentence. But if you wait long enough, you'll learn what they're wanting to tell you. And so we have a line from Champagne that went through Monticello and went to Decatur. It didn't go to Dement. It went through Cisco, Oriana, into Decatur. Most of these small towns have bicycle rails. The real problem is long-term stuff. So when this corridor was closing out, the Railroad Museum had an interurban line. They sensibly removed their Railroad Museum from Champaign and took it to the outskirts of Monticello and reconstituted an electric interurban, which didn't start till about the 1900s, because it was electrical and we didn't have that sort of resource. The railroads were more or less initiated way back in the 1850s, 1860s, and they started off as narrow lines and they got widened. And so all of a sudden, the main line, which was parallel to their railroad museum, which was about 3 miles long, and I went up the hill, the Saragorda Marine, attractive. There's a Camp Creek there that runs into the Sangamon, so you have a Sangamon River, and you have natural areas like Allerton Park and Lodge Park. Interesting stuff, and we would like them to extend. And part of what I want to talk about is the corridor between Whiteheath and Clinton, which is 23 miles. Get back on your drone. We have a friendly soul named Jeff Cunningham, who has been a photographer for WILL for years, and he's retired, and his avocation is drones. So we're enlisting him to be a part of this. So we can have Jeff up in the air, licensed as a drone driver, looking at things. And you can do this from your car, you can do it from walking, but a lot of our corridors are grown over. We stood there 34 years ago and bought this line for three reasons. The first one was prairie preservation, because it's almost extinct. The state has managed to save less than 0.01% of the ecosystem. And people took it down in bulk. It was from them. There was weeds and a curse. It has loaded with chickens and ticks and is ugly. Much, much better to have trees. But there were very few trees. Champaign County was 94% prairie. Their heritage ecosystem, the world's heritage ecosystem, was right here as prairie, not a replacement with trees that you can sit under and hug and all the rest of it. So people who plant 1,000 trees are often planting them on prairie soils. It's up to some of us to try and educate people as to the nature of this ecosystem. We had in the 1860s, early 60s, a fellow named Thoreau, and he was in Concord, and he had every chance to go to Harvard. But he didn't want to be a monolithic person. He wanted to use his multiple skills to find out about the vegetation in a very small area. And he did it very well. He even did it better than scientists. He mightn't have got the species right or whatever, but he would write books on this sort of thing. And they're still being written. He's died in 1862. But we need some of that sort of literary skill. Thoreau is a nabob in literary circles, and he writes well. So we need people with poetry. We need people with sociology, and that's in there. So that is an add-on. If we're at a library, and it has a chance to allow us to expand on a 5-acre lot, then we would like them to have a little bit of Thoreau there, and a little bit of history, and a Pepsin factory, and a railroad museum, and engineers and biologists. Fortunately, somebody ran over a eastern Massasauga rattlesnake, and there are such rattlesnakes in other parts of Monticello, but the biologists have been out there with rattlesnake cages to try and catch them. The Department of Natural Resources has walked it, burned it. All these things are to encourage the ecology. Fran Hardy, when he was in charge of this region's natural, it was the Department of Natural Areas resource person in this region, and he retired to the Nature Conservancy. So we had people like George Fell, and George Fell was working with early ecologists, Vestal and Thorup, I forget the name, but these were very early ecologists. And so George and his wife Barbara had been grown up in Rockford, and the two airports, O'Hare and Midway, are getting too small for package companies. So Rockford is becoming a subsidiary airport. And George stood there long, long ago and said, this is a gravel prairie and it's unique, 25 acres. They got it down to 14 acres, but recently, long after George has died, there are 1,000 people out there not wanting that prairie disturbed. The airport people think you can pick up a plant and put it somewhere else and it's going to grow, but these all have associations. Well, George and his wife came to study with the early ecologists, but he went off to Washington, bought a house, bought up a offset press, and created the Nature Conservancy. He probably handpicked his board, but his handpicked board, 7 years later, decided they wanted to do one project with barrier islands outside Long Island. And they more or less fired George. And he came back to Illinois and created things like the Forest Preserve. Forest Preserve was oriented to preservation. But the politicians got into the act with recreation. And recreation is an anathema if you want to preserve a natural area. But it got there. So George also had his fingers in a Vermilion County has a conservation district. So conservation districts have much more right to preserve. So at 34 years ago, we sort of stood there and in the middle of demolition and bought 33 miles of railroad bed, and we paid for it. And a bunch of people across the country were doing that. So we were watching, being watched by the federal government. The Congress had created a Steiger's Act, which allowed people to, on small grain lines that were obsolete, to abandon them. And it was a massive result. The Congress was worried that they were losing essential connections. So they created a problem that they observed that hikers and biologists and others were buying these lines. And they figured that it was cheaper to have them do an interim trail use and pay them to have a bikeway or a corridor. And they created a national-level rail banking act with interim trail use. And they would drop, it was managed by the Surface Transportation Board, and they would drop money in the case of the Kickapoo Trail. We knew about the creation of this trail and the dumping of money, like $12 million. And at the moment, one of the being developed in phases, and a bridge over this, the Salt Fork of the Vermilion has just been completed right next to Kickapoo State Park, 100 feet off the ground, quarter mile long, 998 bridge ties on it. They remodeled it for a bicycle trail, and the accolades are coming out of the woodwork. Both parties love this sort of thing. And when these abandoned towns like Jinzhou get activated, they enjoy it. They have economics. The restaurant at Jinzhou has bicycles on the wall, and they're making money out of this. And people at Ogden and along the line are buying up in anticipation. So this has sociological friendliness. It brings people together. Sometimes it's a bedroom community. They can take a bicycle to the University of Illinois rather than a car. So back to the retreat area in and around Monticello.
Yeah, Dave, you mentioned that there were three reasons why you bought up the 33 miles. The first one was to preserve the prairie.
Yes.
And that's as far as we've gotten.
Okay. The second was to bicycle trails. And the third one was to allow the Railroad Museum to bring historic trains into Champaign. So the first one is a prime target for recreation. It's near to an expanding sporting institution, and it's very possible that they would love to take a trail through to Allerton Park, Armenia. Sam Allerton bought this land in the 1860s because he was providing food for the Union Army, and he gave it to his son, and then the son gave it to the university. So that's for us, or for me especially, is a biological retreat. And it's 34 years, the prairie that likes ballast and dry areas has come back onto the ballast. We do not want a trail through that to destroy it. So the research and our notes and our own observation know that a trail through the middle of a natural area will destroy it. And we're down to so little left that this is not even the best area. It's a poor facsimile, but it's the only ones we have left. And it's a narrow corridor, so you don't pick up 100 broadleaf plants and grasses. You pick up what you get. But it's there, and visitors can come in 200 years' time, 500 years' time. So we have to get people to look at that. So that's corridor number one. Corridor number two is the one that goes to Champaign, where the museum would like to re-rail 4 miles of Heartland Pathos ground, to extend to Bonneville. Canadian National doesn't like small elevators, so they have put up the rental and put the grain on the road. The trackage is still intact, and we're a little bit desperate to get in contact. Surface Transportation Board is controlled. Canadian National is there, but the city is having other concerns about people movers versus freight movers, and so we have multiple arguments back there. But a train eventually could come in. If we buy that 7 miles, it will be $3 million. Now, you're going to go west of Monticello. The Railroad Museum was wise to have 3 miles of interurban bed. But all of a sudden, when they didn't quite expect it, but some people knew, the main line closed out. So they bought 7 miles. So they have both interurban and mainline, and it has character. They can take people up to the top of the Cerro Gordo Moraine and fire fireworks or trips. These are things that people like to do. They'd like to give a graduation award, which was take the train up the hill and come back and drive it back. So this is fun stuff. It's educational stuff, and it's what we want. It goes up to Whiteheath. Both these, this 7 miles, has a Y on one side and a Y on the other. The Y is a triangle where you can take a train and move it around, and the engines can still be in front. You can push your train around, but humans are used to engines being in the front. There's one at Whiteheath, and there's a one that allows them to access onto the Wabash mainline. The railroads have been doing well with the mainlines. We're talking about the subsidiary lines. So if you take your your small machinery and take a photograph here, you have Whiteheath sitting on a hill, and at the end of 7 miles of Railroad Museum. And so you can go to Champaign if you want to. You can go to Decatur if you want to. You can go to Lincoln if you want. Not everyone knows that. We have a responsibility to let know. We were hoping that the Kickapoo Trail would be finished and be a help to us before we sort of worked with this corridor. But this corridor can more respectably be a trail. So the recreation comes to this trail. The farmers, many of them have agricultural degrees, and they have a knowledge of the genetics. If they want to change from planting soybeans once a year, and they want to take 50 years and 50 scientists to develop a perennial soybean that you would harvest like alfalfa, then you have to have the resources, and they're almost gone. Some farmers don't understand that. They are leaders in these communities. They are on the fire department and they're on the school board, and they have the right to dig us up. Over 34 years and before that, probably with the little use of the corridor, trees began to grow. And trees are very attractive to recreators. And so all of a sudden we have people who are very commercial farmers who bought land on either side of our land. And they haven't paid the taxes in 34 years. They don't have good titles, and we've caught up with them, but they've taken out trees. So we're in court. We've stopped that activity, very heavy bulldozer equipment and high hose, and every tree is valuable. If you have 34 years, there are 34 rings. And we've got to the point where if you destroy natural history, you can almost put a value on it. You can put a value on corn, you can put a value on soybeans. It's taken the agronomists a while to do that. So we take the agronomist example, and a tree that is 6 inches across and 30 years old is valuable. And so we can, if we win our case, we can charge that. We might not be unkind enough to do that, because you have to be very careful, because if you have one naysayer, the one naysayer will override a lot of people. We're sitting on top of the Mahomet Aquifer, and 80,000 people drink from that. But if you have a few naysayers, you have a problem. We've had a problem just recently, and that has liberalized this corridor some. But taking out the trees means that the birds and the bees don't have contiguity, and if they disturb the soil and fertilize the soil, that's screwed up too. So we're at it. And part of my song and dance today is to make sure that people know the value of this corridor. That's to augment the flatland retreat that exists for eons, but has been augmented and augmented. And so we have the start of the trail west is it goes down to a park called Shady Rest. Nobody seemed to know about it, but the Price family in Champaign owned it, and we had 1,000 bridge ties there, and there was a truss bridge, and Mrs. Price wanted that saved and put something like $100,000 into contribute to that. We have to, unfortunately, become like a politician. We believe in what we do, but we've been sort of mild-mannered about telling people what we do. And but we have to accept the fact that we need to say, yes, we believe in this. We want to tell you what we're doing. And I have board members who also know the value of this corridor to the region, to the public. This is a fairly wealthy region with not too many retreat resources. And if you look at surrounds, you go from Decatur to Champaign-Urbana to Danville, you have Indianapolis to St. Louis to Chicago. They're the sort of people. You have locals who don't know diddly about their landscape. They're working it. They bought it for 7 cents an acre in some cases. And it's gone through families, several generations. So I have to take you to Whiteheath. There's railroad qualifications there. And so you can go several ways. But there's the moraine, and there's a river, Sangamon River, right down there, just a mile away. So we want to get down there with a train because it joins into the Railroad Museum. The Railroad Museum has been using their vacant parts of their line to store ADM and other organizations' rail cars. And sometimes they're there, and sometimes when the cars are needed, they're not. So you won't have a chance to be able to move easily there if there are cars in the way. But you can have a rail car up at Whiteheath, and you can run down there. Yeah. So it's also embankments. So you can't do something like put a trail adjacent to a rail. You have to have joint use. And everyone knows that an 80-mile-an-hour railroad line has killed people, and engine drivers are paranoid about this sort of problem. So, but no, we have adequate precedents for taking railroad and doing it at 2 miles an hour. So, evil-minded, we have no trees left, so we can't have railroad ties. They're wooden. We create concrete ties, but they have rebar in them, and after 90 years, the rebar rots, and the tie breaks up, and it's a mess. We have ceramic engineers who have been experimenting for years to create a polymer tie. They're not just working with railroads. This is fundamental research. So they go to clays that are high in aluminum and silicate, and they puddle them with fibers. And one of the wonderful fibers that works is hemp. And it is much stronger than rebar, believe it or not, much lighter than rebar. And it can be molded into a railroad tie with bolts on it so you don't have to put a spike down. And it lasts forever. It's not going to poop out at 90 years. So we have to talk to people about sustainability in the future. So we want to, this is dreams, this is, but it's fairly real, because standing in the wings are people who want to use polymers. And it's not just in railroad situations, but we're almost to the point with someone who knows about this, and they would like to manufacture enough polymer ties to go down to the Shady Rest. So you need 20,000 ties. Mm. It's a lot of ties. And you probably don't take a heavy steam engine down there with one wheel, one power wheel. You spread it with an old diesel with bogies that spread the weight, and you don't abuse it. Well, at the moment, that corridor's a sort of walking territory. For years, in cities and other places, trains have been walked up, rails have been walked by people across them and along them. And so we're not ever going to stop the people from Whiteheath from walking down to Shady Rest. Shady Rest is a wonderful retreat. It has bottomland forest. And it has upland moraine forest. It has wonderful wildlife. It's spring at the moment. The last few weeks, it's been wonderful. The Department of Natural Resources has designated it as a soil and water conservation easement. So we're in a place where we have titles and deeds and responsible organizations that have done interesting things and deserve to be supported. The 30 acres was a platted town, which never happened. It was on two sides of the railroad line. And Mrs. Price and others knew that. They bought it, and they would put little concrete houses along. You could go and take a fish in the Sangamon. Mm. You could have flat races, but you'd have natural areas. And they had a house or two. And they had a riotous time out of there. So when the Price family died, we managed to get this into the Forest Preserve. So it's in perpetuity. That means that it's going to be around for 500 years. It's going to have a tax base. It has qualifications. So we want to encourage those polymer ties, but... Now comes another variable. For 4 or 5 years, perhaps just 3 years, wind energy has been in Monticello area. You have a Cerro Gordo moraine, and it's 6 inches higher than anything else. So you have permission eventually to put in wind turbines. But the problem with wind turbines is that they have no electrical grids. So they do have a peaker plant near to our corridor, and they need to take electricity from the wind turbines under or over Heartland Pathways. And so just this week, we have had some interesting things happen, and one of them was that the wind farm people have come with a document, 34 or 5 pages, and we were expected to sign an agreement to put a power lines under or over. You can't always put them under because we have a high water table, because this was swampland. So you might have to put it over. We don't quite know. But engineers tend to know. And they tend to know engineering, but they don't know biology, and they don't know some of the other things. So they tend to go to a farmer, and if they want to put in a pedestal, then they have an agreement with the farmer, and the farmer's grateful, and it's done and finished. It's like dump and run. But no, I have a board. We need to know what you're doing and why and how. We would like to have your involvement. So believe it or not, but in 50 years' time, the wind farm people may not be using rebar in their concrete. They may be using the hemp that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And we'll have farmers in the background that'll help us by growing hemp. Mm-hmm. And we'll have perhaps a little less herbicide here and a little less fertilizer there. And we'll have a few prairie plants left. And we'll take people down. So we need a project, folks. And the project might be to... So this is a long-term easement. This is like going forever. So there's we might be game to ask for $500,000 or perhaps even $1 million to go down to Shady Rest and to have them involved, because they too might be wanting to use hemp in the future. So some of this is attitudinal. How do we infuse a little biology and a little ecology and a little history into engineers that sometimes can be one track? So I got to be careful, because I can very easily insult people who know how the world works, and it's going to be done. And we want to do it today. We want your signature here. So we're in discussion. So for the people at Whiteheath, they need to know that. So we have a project where they might contribute money for us to take the vegetation off the 1 mile and to work with the Railroad Museum, so that people won't freak out if they take a rail car down there. We'll have to find rail. We'll have to... it sort of takes 15 years. Sometimes if you're working with people who are very... who know what's going on and have a real problem with the nature of Jason, after 15 years and you... they've learned it, they become really religious supporters of what the hell you're doing. So we need that. And to some extent, whether I'm alive or dead, I have had a lot to do with this. So we have to present our case. It's done very well. WILL does it all the time. They advertise tell you what they have done. They're not waiting for and that can be the same sort of thing. This is where you have to speak your piece. So when we're talking to you right now, I'm looking at the time.
We have about 15 minutes left, and I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to WEFT Champaign.
Yes. Thank you. And do you have any questions as we get this far?
Well, I just actually a comment. I don't know about a question, but I was out driving in the country one day and just stumbled upon Shady Rest. I didn't even know it existed. I went by, there's an old platform where people used to get on the train, I assume.
Yes.
And then a park that has some beautiful walking trails and an old schoolhouse not far from there. I never knew about Shady Rest, so I'm glad that you brought that up today to educate our listeners about that area. It's beautiful.
Well, you can't take people to the trails. They're not interesting, and you have to push your way through the vegetation. And so we have to take the pictures to the people. That's where we need people like David Witsunny, who've been helping us to put pictures into radio programs to create a visual program that we have to be out there. So we have to use media. We have to use Facebook and Twitter and those things. And we're not totally familiar with it. We're looking for people, supporters. But we also have donors who do this. And we have to make sure that the new generation will take on, because I'm frankly getting old and I have to retreat from this and leave information. So we need that sort of work, and that's what you, if you're starting a not-for-profit, it's not easy, but we're at it. So I have to be dead or alive, I have to be a totem pole for this stuff. And my board has to be out there. Whiteheath is having a 150th anniversary coming up. We don't exactly know what we do. We're sitting in the wings. We don't want to be dominant, but these are big organizations, Monticello Railroad Museum and the like. We have to explain to people who already somewhat know the value of this 23-mile corridor all the way to Clinton. It goes down the Shady Rest, but then it can extend to across Madden Creek, up to Lodge, to DeLand, Weldon, Lane. And then you have another river system, which has been dammed to create the Clinton Lake, the power plant, the cooling lake. And bless me, the corridor goes down and across another truss bridge and up a Hensley Moraine. So you have the same sort of rolling nature. And the it's 20 years ago, when we were somewhat more naive, we worked with the Department of Natural Resources, and they sort of love this area because 5 miles of this corridor of ours joins two well-used state parks. And they put lawyers onto it, and they're happy with the titles. So they offered us $105,000 for the 5 miles, which was like half the appraisal value. So naively, we sort of said no at the time. But if we'd been more knowledgeable, and there's a few other factors involved, we could have recognized that the cost is in the legal work, the finding out the background. So we may be able to restore that. We may have to, in this case, give it. But the cost of taking over a trail is not just in a trail. You have to develop it. You have to have signs. It's a multi-million dollar thing. So we're looking from Whiteheath to state and almost national level activities. So that's what I'm at. It's conceptually, you have to beg the farmers to realize that those small communities that lost out to demolition will benefit and have fun and have bicycle shops and restaurants that they didn't have before. So we have to institute that, and we have an attorney that is helping to do that, and we have a judge that we hope will support the public involvement rather than the commercial involvement. We're in the middle of that, and if you have any questions, it's Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign. But it has we have a phone number,
217-359-9338 is the WEFT phone number.
My cell phone is 217-840-1911. We've been trying to transfer my landline to Verizon so we have the flexibility of a cell phone. So my older helpers look for Monk, and we don't have that easy access at the moment. So these are little things that make not-for-profit stuff exciting, but and we think we'll win. So out there, folks, and get to know your territory. So drive to Clinton. The railroad line is half section away. You can see where they're taking out trees. And we need your support. Road Camp, who has been solid water person with the underground aquifer, is also president of the Railroad Museum. And we want people like that. Bruce Hannon, which helped to save the Alton Park from being dammed with an Oakley Reservoir, and others. We need people out there. We need your local people, too. So this is local stuff, state stuff, and federal stuff. And it's the sort of thing you develop over years and years. It's not stuff that you're going to do here and now. And the per cost per person when it's done is very low, but the expenditure has to be down. This is the one time ever you're going to get that corridor. So think about it. I think we're near to the end.
Oh, we still have about 8 or 9 minutes.
Okay.
Let's we're good.
Keep going.
Good. Yeah. So you talked about the Y branch a little bit earlier. So can you talk a little bit more about where those Ys go, and are there more Ys around here in the county?
Well, yes, they were used to turn trains. And so you could go a mile back in one direction and come back. And turn trains around. So the Railroad Museum owns what's in the middle of the Y, and they know they also own around the edge. And the people who are promoting their use of historic trains have bought land nearby. And so we need to have booths, and it may be that the rail cars will be stored at the time, so we might not have access on the date. So the date is important. But if we don't have access to the 7 miles of rail, we will be able to store an active car in the Whiteheath area. So we're watching what Whiteheath wants to do, so we have to be present at meetings and work at it. So the Railroad Museum has a clout, and they have a front in terms of Champaign, Havana, and Western Railroad, which is we've transferred natural history territory. The Railroad Museum now has ownership of the ballast, which means that if they upgrade it, someone like Heartland Pathways, if they ever go out of business or something like that, won't pull the rug out from underneath them. So they have that sort of clout too. The museum itself is wonderful, but is a little bit of reserve about doing something like this. So that's why the CH&W is a front. There are families involved. There are visitors involved. If we've allowed this purchase of the ballast to go up to Norfolk Southern Railroad at Lodge, and there's a rumor in the distance that that line might close out, so that could be an extra trail. Hmm. It's not likely to happen because all these small elevators have gone to a super elevator like the elevator at Anderson's out west of town.
In West Champaign, right.
And they have big railroad storage. So they can send 150 cars out at once instead of the old lines, you might only get 14 cars, and you can hardly fit the engine in, and has to come and pick up these little pieces. Mm-hmm. So you're asking good questions. So we have to be there, and we're asking people who don't know where they're listening. The Sierra Club, for instance, the Isaac Waterling, the has gone bust here, but it's one of those institutions that has helped to educate people, and there are plant societies, and this is unfortunately, or fortunately, this is a hard science university. It's not not so ecological. The ecologists are here, but many of our ecologists have left for other institutions because we don't have that strength. But our interests are in art and education and science. So we're in the arts and sciences field, which is better than being in the agricultural field, which has a dominance to look for monocrops. It's a different cat. And fairly recently, Monsanto has donated facilities on First Street and then expanded. And the academics don't like some of their herbicides. So Monsanto has said, what the hell? We're giving you money. Hmm. But the deans have said, no, we're going to stand on our digs. We don't want a herbicide that blows across fields. And so there are these debates that go on in the background. Mm-hmm. We have towers going up between Seymour and White Heath to replace stanchions, the towers that have been four-legged and the legs are beginning to rot. So that's happening. But the winter has not been frozen. You usually do that when the soil is frozen. And now heavy equipment going in can make you 10-foot trips. So watch that one too. Run down Route 10 and see what's happening and how we restore it. So we have to put in replacement prairie seed because we bought it for prairie. But guess what? They discovered herbicide. And so the axe that took out a tree has been replaced by a cocktail of herbicides that will take out a tree for 3 years. And guess what? It takes out your prairie too. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of variables to this. And we encourage you to get out there and scratch around and walk down a railroad line like Gina has done and find a place and imagine what you would want to do in 50 years' time or 100 years' time. We just don't dump and run. We get those engineers involved and it might not happen. I might have already been different enough that it's hard to deal with this sort of thing. So we might be avoided, but that's what we're at. And we thank you for listening. How's our time?
Oh, we're good. We have about maybe a minute to go. So yeah, let's wrap things up, and we'll get on to our next program here at WEFT Champaign.
Yes, WEFT has been tremendously helpful in this sort of thing. We have taken a camera of our radio program, and we have a chip, and we can add pictures and charts and graphs, and that's very helpful. The radio has imagination, so it's wonderful in that sense. But it's a pictorial world, mm-hmm. and it helps people understand what a meadow vole is like, or whatever you are going to stand on. Mm-hmm. So we need those experts. If you're out there and you have a media capacity, we need your support. We need to sort out these documents, and we need to sort of curtail some of the invagination, which is just from side to side. But we certainly need to block the cross extermination of our resource. So it's like our audacity to be dreaming big money, but money comes in many ways. So the university does the primary research. The applied people are looking into a future. The local people have some involvement. So once you get to start, the state money comes in. So kick up a